The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley. He has a morning off. He has no voice. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Just found this, just written yesterday by Karl Rove. Will Democrats ever say yes to immigration reform? They now have an opportunity to do so, as President Trump demands funding for additional miles of physical barrier along the southern border. But rather than providing Mr. Trump money in return for immigration changes they say they want, congressional Democratic leaders are rebuffing the request with focus group tested rhetoric. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called a border wall immoral, ineffective, and expensive, presumably having seen the same data. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer labeled the wall expensive, ineffective. At least he reversed the order. Other congressional Democrats are even more dismissive. Senator Kamala Harris denounced the wall as a vanity project, while Representative Max Rose of New York said it's a fifth century solution to a 21st century problem. Well, if they believe the wall is an immoral, ineffective, expensive fifth-century vanity project, why were Ms. Pelosi, Majority Whip James Clyburn, and Democratic Caucus Chairman Hakeem Jeffries among 111 Democrats and 256 House members who voted last March for a Homeland Security appropriation that included $1.6 billion for a border wall? Why were Mr. Schumer, Minority Whip Dick Durbin, and seven of the other nine members of the Senate Democratic leadership among the 40 upper chamber Democrats who also voted for that appropriation with its wall funding? Were they immoral? Was Senator Barack Obama mistaken in 2006 when he praised the passage of legislation providing for better fences and better security along our borders? Was President Obama engaged in a vanity project in 2009 when he oversaw construction of roughly 133 miles of fence, barriers, and wall along the border? Were Presidents George Herbert Walker Bush and Bill Clinton wrong when, frustrated by the rising numbers of illegal border crossings in San Diego, they constructed most of what is now 46 miles of fence and wall along the California-Mexico border? According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, illegal crossings in San Diego have dropped 92% in the 23 years since the wall went up there. Illegal traffic dropped 95% in the 22 years following Mr. Clinton's wall in El Paso, Texas. After the Tucson, Arizona sector wall was finished, illegal traffic dropped 90% over 15 years. And once the Yuma, Arizona sector wall was in place under George W. Bush, illegal traffic dropped 95% over 9 years. Physical barriers, walls, fences, whatever you want to call them, are a necessary part of border security. They aren't needed everywhere, but they are essential, especially in urban areas, in stopping people from jumping the border and fading into neighborhoods. Much more is needed, including personnel, air assets, and more and better technology on border and ports of entries, but walls help stop illegal border crossings. Yet if Democrats believe their own messaging, they have a moral obligation not only to stop spending money on border barriers, but also to remove the existing ones. Don't hold your breath for them to introduce and pass it, though. Not even House Democrats are that suicidal. Democrats appear more eager to use immigration as a political weapon than to resolve the policy issue. Why else did so many Democrats help gut the 2007 bipartisan immigration reform championed by President Bush and Senators Ted Kennedy and John McCain? Why else did Democrats fail to pass comprehensive immigration reform during Mr. Obama's first 2 years in office when his party's congressional majorities were massive? Such Democratic posturing on immigration rather than action helps explain why Mr. Obama worried about Latino turnout in 2012, in the 2012 presidential election, why Mr. Trump did better than expected among Hispanics in 2016, and why a third of Hispanics backed the GOP today. So that was, I just found that from Karl Rove. So there you go. There's where we are. 866-90-RED-EYE if you'd like to get in. Let us head to you. We go to Rick in Pikeville, Tennessee. Rick, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Rick. What's up?
Hi, Gary. Hi, Gary. Thanks for taking my call. I really enjoy your show.
You're welcome.
Concerning the sanctuary cities, if that's illegal, why doesn't the federal government, and I think they're doing something about it, I thought that they had brought a lawsuit against them, but I haven't heard anything about the outcome of that.
Well, yeah, the executive branch has, number one, tried to, the Justice Department, for example, has tried to take away federal funding in certain areas, and the courts have ruled so far that they can't do that because Congress has to do that, and Congress has not yet done that. You know, we seem to have forgotten here the role of Congress. We've had a few callers today thinking that the president and the executive branch can do everything. It's your elected representatives in Congress. They're the ones who make the law. They're the ones who appropriate the money. Don't know what else to say. We go to Sheldon in Eureka, California. Sheldon, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Gary. It's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Thanks.
I'm a liberal, but I still enjoy your show. I believe in listening to both sides of an issue. I was wondering, did you hear Representative Hurd yesterday morning?
I've heard him over the last couple of years. I know his position on the law.
His position, well, you know, his district, he's a Republican congressman.
Yes, and we know.
And
yeah.
And his district has the longest border with Mexico. I believe it's over 800 miles. And he was talking, he talks to the Border Patrol people all the time, and he asked them, what do they need? And he agrees that there needs to be a wall, but a wall where there are city-to-city contact, you know, between the United States and Mexico, like Juarez and Nuevo Laredo and places like that. But he says what they're telling him is that there needs to be more of a, they're not a, and I'm going to quote him. He said, we don't need a wall from sea to shining sea.
Right.
We don't need a $5 billion wall. But what he's
No, because the wall is, the $5 billion is not wall to sea to shining sea. That's the whole point. The whole point is, not that we're not having a discussion and the president isn't willing to listen. The president isn't getting $25 billion for the wall. This is $5 billion, and as he's stating, this is places where the Border Patrol is telling him to put it. The Democrats want zero money for a wall. Zero. They want none. They don't care whether it's a fence. They don't care. They don't want any. This isn't a debate between Will Hurd and the semantics of how much do we want and whether it should be a metal wall or whether it should be a fence. This is about the Democrats who believe in open borders. So it's not the minutia differences that you might have. Well, do we need a concrete wall? Do we need a full wall? Do we need a wall sea to shining sea? Is that possible to do so? Do we need it in certain, as Karl Rove was just stating there? Many of the experts say we don't need it in all areas. Well, the president isn't asking for the money for all areas. He's asking for way less than it would cost to build a wall from sea to shining sea. And so I want to remain focused on what the actual debate is. And the debate is Democrats want nothing for a barrier anywhere. They want no new money for a barrier anywhere. That's the debate. Red Eye, we go to Pete in New Hampshire. Pete, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Pete.
Hey, Gary. How you doing?
Very good.
You know, this whole thing is all about one word. This is all about resistance.
I agree with you.
They want the clock to run out on Trump the next 2 years, so when he's gone, he's gone. They don't want a thing to do with this guy. I'm a Trump supporter. I'm a conservative in New Hampshire, which I'm becoming a scarce commodity now. Mm-hmm. Our state's been taken over by the liberals. We have four representatives in Washington, and they don't represent me in any shape, form, or manner. And not just me, not just a handful of people in New Hampshire, at least 50% of the people in New Hampshire. This state once was a conservative Republican state, and it's gone by the way of the dodo bird.
Yeah, but that's, again, what you're stating is the obvious. There isn't any opposition that doesn't want the next president out. And they want this president out so bad that they're riding the tightrope, that the political tightrope, that the Republicans have the ability and have had the ability to push them off that political tightrope, and they've refused to do so. I had the discussion with my best friend since 7 years of age. Say, we haven't talked in a while, and he's as conservative as you can get. And, you know, we had the discussion, and it was like, look, the Democrats are going to be who the Democrats are going to be. You can't control who the Democrats are going to be. Of course they're going to oppose this president. Of course they're going to hate the president. What is the only thing that you can control? You can control the people that you put in office and the people that claim that this is what we're about, hold them to a standard and understand that it's their responsibility not just to fight. And we said this from the very beginning when people said, well, we like Trump because he fights. It's not enough to fight. That's a great campaign slogan. You've got to fight and win. And Eric brought it up yesterday. He said, what my father said one time, my father said, when you argue in public, be right. When you open your mouth, be right. In business, be right 100% of the time. Now, I said, you're not going to be right 100% of the time. But when you open your mouth, make sure you're right 100% of the time. And I even take that, again, as more important now than ever, especially in politics, where the Democrats have no substance on the issues. None. You heard the last liberal caller who called, and he tried to focus this as something between Trump and Will Hurd. Well, it's not. You can have nuances on it. That's not the debate. And I'm not going to let him go there because that's not the debate. It's not a wall from sea to shining sea right now. It's some barrier money. And the Democrats have stated they want zero, not $1. This isn't the difference in the nuances between what a Will Hurd would want in a wall and President Trump would want in a wall. You can have that debate. This is the Democrat leadership and the core of the Democratic Party stating we want nothing for any type of border barrier anywhere under this president. So you ask why. But it's up to the Democrats, or excuse me, it's up to the Republicans. The Republicans are the only ones who can fight back. The media is not going to do it for them. They have to do it. And they can do it effectively. It's easy to win this battle. You can win 100% of the time. Their arguments are horrible. They don't even want to have the debate. The last caller doesn't want to have the debate, or there's two callers ago, doesn't want to have the debate, the liberal gentleman who called, between what the Democrats and Republicans think, because he knows he can't win it. Because the Democrats are for open borders. So it's like, okay, let's rephrase the debate differently. It's between Will Hurd and the president. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's between people that want border security and people that don't. People that believe that if you get over here illegally, you should be able to stay. And I'm not going to let anyone take us off what the true argument and debate is. Democrats don't want to have that debate. They can't win it. So let's make it a debate. The debate is only between the Republicans and the president. No, it isn't. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Winter time can be tough on trucks. Corrosion often occurs naturally over time, but major causes of corrosion are multiplied during the winter months. While salt solutions on the road are essential to safe driving, they can also wreak havoc on your electrical system. The acidic nature of these chemicals will erode any exposed connections or wires in no time. These materials can also eat away at the frame, undercarriage, braking system, and any other exposed components. Add an electrical systems check to your preventative maintenance routine. This is crucial to help ensure the longevity of your truck's lifespan, especially during winter, when vehicles are more susceptible to corrosive elements on the road. Stop into a TA truck service to have your electrical system inspected by one of our trained technicians today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we will get to more of your calls and comments, and also the article in Politico about the Trump White House urging allies to prepare for a possible Ruth Bader Ginsburg departure. Really interesting, you know, what when you talk about, okay, how what do they mean when it comes to preparing? We will get to all of that because it's about, you know, getting all the different groups together about marketing whoever the candidate's going to be. Now, did you know the group spent $7 million? The Federalist Society, and I forgot the other, I'll have to look it up again, the other group that spent $7 million promoting, running, you know, ads, in essence, for Kavanaugh. So we'll just go over that just a little bit. One of the things they said is, look, even with her previous cancer and things that she's had before, is the fact that she never missed a session. And now she is. So there is concern. And there's been articles written, you know, medical articles about, you know, what possibly how serious, you know, her cancer actually is and whether she can stay on the Supreme Court for any length of time. And so the White House is preparing for that. We'll read you parts of that article coming up here. Plus, the latest on the shutdown and the latest on the Trump administration and where they're now thinking. Now it's not from the Defense Department, but now they're thinking of disaster money to fund the border wall, which brought me to the question, is this all about legalities? Do they feel that if it's an emergency declaration, they have a better chance in the courts getting the disaster money from or getting the emergency money from the disaster fund leftover money there then taking it from the Defense Department and allocating it over to the wall. We don't know. I mean, a lot of one thing we started out the show saying, as we have every show this week, is it's all speculation because we haven't seen the wording. We don't know what the wording would be of the actual emergency announcement or the declaration. So it's all speculation. And so do a little bit more of that. Plus, get your calls and comments too. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Listen to Red Eye Radio on your Amazon Echo every day, anytime. Say, Alexa, enable the Red Eye Radio skill. Then, anytime you want to listen, say, Alexa, open Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Hurley. He has the morning off because he has no voice. I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks for being here this morning. We've had some great calls and comments, and we do appreciate it. This article, I can't let the show go by today without reading this, because we always talk about media bias. And Fox News had this this story that said, news outlets readily described a crisis at the border under then-President Barack Obama when he sought funding to deal with the surge of migrants, many of them women and children. But now that President Trump is in the White House, the mainstream media seems far more reluctant to use the word. Back in the summer of 14, the headlines and stories referred to the C word were plentiful as the border surge was taken seriously. The Washington Post wrote in 2014, White House requests $3.7 billion in emergency funds for border crisis, while CNN published a feature, Daniel's Journey, how thousands of children are creating a crisis in America. It described a problem of epic proportions. Around the same time, the Huffington Post declared that the photos of the humanitarian crisis along the southern border were shocking. And ABC News reported that Obama requested $3.7 billion to cope with the humanitarian crisis on the border and the spike in illegal crossings. The article continues. The ABC News story, Obama plans for $3.7 billion immigration crisis funds, included a photo of detainees sleeping in holding cells at an Arizona placement center in June of 2014. NBC News' Andrea Mitchell said that the undocumented children flooding the border were creating, quote, a crisis for authorities. Many of these articles were highlighted in an email blast from the Republican National Committee, which is actively backing Trump's bid to draw attention to the surging migration flow along the border as the president sinks funding for a border wall with the government partially shut down amid the impasse. The RNC argued the media are challenging Trump's descriptions and the Democrats outright call it a manufactured crisis at a time when the problem has only grown worse by some measures. Said Joe Concha from the Hill.com, the hypocrisy, unfortunately, is no longer stunning. It's utterly predictable. Concha said that much of America's political media is preconditioned to oppose anything the president supports, with the coverage of the immigration fight the latest example. Concha said, for years we heard about how terrible it was for U.S. troops to be in places like Syria and Afghanistan. Trump proposes pulling them out, and suddenly they're for keeping them there. Same thing with the border. Forbes was brief and to the point on Thursday, publishing a headline, there is no border crisis. Vox wrote, the real crisis is that Trump has no idea what he's doing, while Houston's ABC affiliate declared that border communities are not willing to accept Trump's crisis label. The Washington Post political correspondent Dan Baltz penned an analysis headline, Trump used the Oval Office to try to create a border crisis. The New York Times tweeted, President Trump is set to travel to Texas to address a crisis on the Mexico border that Democrats say does not exist. And they go on and on with it. When it was happening in 2014, nobody questioned President Obama. Nobody. Have the problems changed? No. In some cases, are they worse? Yes. Opioids crossing the border. The caravans coming in, the number of migrant families attempting to get across the border right now. That would have been considered a crisis under the Obama administration, which the media would have gone along with. It's not a crisis because Trump says it's a crisis. And again, it's just another example of the media bias that exists. Otherwise, they would have questioned Obama. Why was Obama a crisis, or why wasn't it even analyzed to see whether it was a crisis or not under Obama? Because it was Obama. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's get back to more of your calls and comments. We go to Mike in San Diego. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Good.
Good, good. Hey, I'm a retired Border Patrol agent, and one aspect of this new wall that I don't think it's put out there enough is the Border Patrol agent safety. Because a lot of the old infrastructure, I worked in Arizona, and we went from the landing mat, the old style post 9/11 stuff they threw up real quick,
yep,
to the newer style 24-foot high steel slots, as they call it.
Right.
And with the old stuff, you can't see what's on the other side. Those guys would sneak up there, and they'd crack your windshield. They'd do all kinds of stuff to the vehicles. We had specially made vehicles just for people throwing rocks at us because we couldn't tell when they were sneaking up. With that new fence, completely got rid of that. Nobody's sneaking up on you. It's 24 foot high. Takes quite a bit of time and effort to get up there. So not only does it make it it's a good tool for response time and to work the traffic, it's agent safety is the biggest thing. And there's a lot of that old landing mat still on the southern border. And it would be it'd be helpful for the agents for their safety to get us a new fence. And I wish the president and everybody else would bring that up as well.
No, that's a great point, and I think that, you know, the president has decided that's what he wants to go with is the steel slat, and that's the, you know, Mike, you bring up the mm-hmm. point is that and as others have said, well, look, you know, across the entire 2,000 miles, maybe not practical, but there are many hundreds of miles where a steel fence would still be a tremendous help, as you just brought up, working, you know, used to working with the Border Patrol, that would be extremely effective. And the point is here, and I want to make it clear, and thanks so much for your call, is that the caller earlier tried to make this a debate between people like Will Hurd and, you know, the Republican who says, well, we don't need a sea to shining sea. Well, that's not what they're talking about, or the president is right now, and that's not what he's looking to be to get allocated. It's the Democrats that are saying, no, nothing. No more expansion, nothing. And is it needed? Yeah. As Mike, former Border Patrol, just said, yeah, it's needed. A lot of places it's needed. Democrats have said, no, nothing, none. That's what the debate is, because the debate gets back to what we've always said. Open borders. That's where they're going. That's what they believe in. They believe in sanctuary cities. And if you believe and your party believes and you've convinced cities and even a state to say, if you're an illegal immigrant and you get here, we're going to try to keep you here no matter what. We'll work against the federal government. But once you get here, you get to stay. That is the utmost incentive for anybody to come either come across the border or to overstay their visa. And if you believe that, you're for open borders. We had one person try to challenge me, and it was like, no, it's not. Well, fine. You can keep saying it. It is. Why? Because there is no greater incentive than for a government agency to say, we'll do everything we possibly can to let you stay here permanently. And we'll actually work against the federal government. We won't cooperate with the federal government. We'll actually announce what the federal government is doing in order to protect you so you can stay. Well, then you're for open borders. And that's what the true debate is. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to, we go to James in Chicago. We had talked earlier also about the Democrats trying to one-up each other, both on the free stuff and how high tax rates should go for the rich. James in Chicago, you're on Red Eye Radio. Thanks. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm fine, thank you. First time caller ever. I just want to say that I think it's incorrect. It's not right to tax the rich. A lot of people in this country have worked hard to get to where they're at, to be rich. And as for rich people, I would say a lot of people, including myself, we work for big companies who have rich people who own them, and they give us bonuses, incentives, our 401ks. I have health care through my job. Now, you want to tax them, they're going to take away from people like myself. They're going to start taking away from the people that they take care of to keep their finances in order. And that's going to hurt more than just the rich.
I don't disagree with you. I think the biggest thing, because what the presidential candidates will be talking about, as they already are, I mean, she's not a presidential candidate, but she's getting a lot of press from the mainstream media, Ocasio-Cortez, on her 70% tax rate is talking about that's how they're going to pay for everything. Well, it's not going to pay for everything. They're going to have to come after the middle class. When you want to put in these huge social programs, you eventually go after the middle class. But you bring up the great question, is just because somebody has it, does that mean that government has a right to take the majority of it?
No.
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 No, it doesn't. No. But
as for a taxpayer, I voted for Trump. My tax dollars should be going to pay for that wall.
Well, yeah. I can tell where you stand. You're quite passionate. I'm not laughing at you. I just love the passion. Guarantee I wasn't laughing at you. I just love passion. I got a friend of mine that every time she gets passionate, I start laughing, and you're laughing at me. And I said, no. I just love your passion. I love when people get passionate about something. But yeah, when you talk about it, look, this is what they. This is what they always do. We'll start with the rich. That's how you get it. We're going to tax. Oh, we don't have enough money. Okay, then we're going to tax the next rich and the next rich. And finally they get to the middle class because that's where the real money is. And so this is old school. We went through this already. Oh, Ocasio-Cortez offering something new. Taxing the rich? Yeah, we haven't been through that in the last 50 years in the country, have we? No Democrat has suggested that the last 100 years. It's just going back to repeating again. Well, what was it, Julian Castro? Well, we had great times, Rebecca. You know, the economy did great when we taxed more, as if raising the cost of raising taxes makes the economy better. They got out of that for a while. Because remember, all through the 90s, until about 12 years ago, Democrats were still proposing that a minimum wage increase helps the economy. Well, they finally realized we can't sell this. Okay, it helps the person there. And when former Governor Jerry Brown signed the California bill to raise the minimum wage, he actually said it doesn't make economic sense. It may not make economic sense, but it makes political and social justice sense. Well, wait a minute. How does it make social justice sense if you hurt the economy, if you make the economy do worse, which creates fewer jobs, which means what? When you raise the cost of doing business, they're going to go to what? It's going to be faster to automation. As you see in many fast food restaurants today, those jobs go away. Who's hurt the most? The poor. Those who are uneducated, less skilled jobs. They get hurt the most. The ones that Democrats claim that they care about. And so we're just repeating the same argument over and over again. It's like, oh, okay, we've got a new generation here. The millennials are coming in. They didn't hear the argument from 15 years ago, so let's repeat it again. Since we know we're talking to an ignorant America, an America that has no idea what the three branches of government are, an America that can't tell you the freedoms in the First Amendment, since they have no idea what's going on, let's try to sell them economics that's completely false. The next thing will be the drastic increase back to the corporate tax rate. I'm amazed that they're going after the rich before they go after the corporate tax rate. I don't know why that is, because I figured that would be the first thing they'd go after, because they've been so successful in selling that as punishing the corporations, when actually it's a stealth tax on the consumer, and it hurts the poor and the middle class the most. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. He lost his voice, so he's out this morning. So it's just me and you and the discussion on a variety of different things. Of course, leading it is where we're going with the government shutdown and whether the president will call for an emergency declaration on the border in order to get money to fund parts of the barrier.
We're certainly under attack by criminal gangs, by criminals themselves, by the human traffickers, and by drugs of all kinds. Much of it comes through the southern border.
And so we'll see where it all goes this weekend. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know what's on the president's docket today, but what I'm going to assume, I mean, will the president call? These are the questions I can't answer, but will the president call one last meeting and say, we'll give the Democrats one more chance and call them in, and then nothing gets done, and then he says, okay, the emergency declaration, then you'll see an immediate injunction, and then we go from that point on. And where we go from that point on, I just don't know. As I said to start out the show, I just did a ton of reading yesterday from all different constitutional law experts who said, well, probably Trump can do it and probably he can't do it. But the key word on both sides was probably. It's like it's been untested. Nobody is really sure how the courts would view this.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. Eric has the morning off because he has absolutely no voice. Should have made him come in and just listen to me talk. You know, that's what we should have done. That would have been punishment for him, but we wish him well and hope he recuperates and is back for Sunday night, Monday morning show. In the news, well, will the president declare an emergency, a national emergency? We will see. Yesterday was an interesting day because a ton of reading from different constitutional experts where I saw that the word probably was used more than anything from both sides. From the side that said that they believe that the president probably doesn't have the authority to do this, to the numerous media outlets that said the president probably has the authority to do this. The key word was in almost all the articles, the word probably was used. It'll be interesting to see because, again, we're just speculating the different scenarios out there because we don't know how the president would write the national emergency declaration. So it's tough to figure out what the law is behind it. So a lot of people sort of generalizing. One of the things that I did notice yesterday is that the White House came out and said that they were looking maybe to use the possibility of using emergency funds. This is funds that are allocated by Congress for national emergencies, which are basically weather-related, natural disasters, wildfire, whatever, and any of that money that wasn't allocated, that hasn't been used, they could use for the wall. And so what I started thinking was, well, so they don't want to take it from defense because that was the case. Why can't we take it since the wall is national defense, is viewed as national defense because the federal government's job is to protect our borders. Therefore, it seemed that one of the narratives that existed was to take it from national defense and put it there. Why did they drop that? Is it because they thought that that would hurt them politically if they decided to do that, or they thought that the legal barrier might be higher? One of the things that I see is immediately, if the president did this, you would see a federal judge, you know, within, 48 hours come out and put out an injunction, and then it would go through the court process. What would happen when it gets to the Supreme Court? I really can't tell you because I don't know what the scenario is. I don't know how it would be written. All I know is one of my concerns is that John Roberts doesn't like the Supreme Court to make these decisions when it's between the executive branch and Congress. That many times he believes they should just work it out. We're staying out of it completely. I don't know how it would affect it because there's a couple of scenarios. Probably the most likely is you're going to find a federal judge or an appeals court that says, sorry, Mr. President, you don't have the authority. That would be the biggest fear for people that wish for the wall to go up and believe the president can do this, because then if it gets to the Supreme Court and they say, well, no, we're not going to hear it. Well, what instructions do they give to the lower court? What happens at that point? Because one of the problem is it's not, in my opinion, the courts will have a problem in that they don't want to define what an emergency is. It's like, what are the president's war powers? Very vague. And done so on purpose by the founding fathers, because you don't know what kind of scenario you're going to find yourself in. And if the president needs to react immediately, only the president can react. So when it comes to a national emergency, even though Congress, back in 76, entered it, they were trying to restrict the president when it came to the powers that he had. So really, does that even hold water at all? Which then gets us to the point, because I thought it was a bad analogy yesterday, because this conversation was going back and forth everywhere, the different scenarios. Well, if Trump does this, then the next Democrat president could come in and say, there's a national emergency on gun deaths, therefore I'm going to confiscate all the guns. I looked at that as sort of a weak analogy, because the Second Amendment is pretty clear. The Second Amendment exists and talks specifically about guns. So I looked at that and went, that's a pretty weak argument. The argument that I saw that was stronger, well, I don't know, I can't remember if I saw it or did we come up with it on the show? I can't remember whether we came up with it on the show yesterday or I read it somewhere, would be the whole climate change thing. Climate change is a crisis, right? Climate change is going, look, what do they say? It's going to destroy the world. It's the worst crisis that we face is climate change. Democrats say it all the time. During the Obama administration, remember the Pentagon report, the military report that came out and said, climate change is our number one security challenge. Our number one problem will be climate change and the possibility of wars that we will get into. What? President comes in and says, oh, there it is. Pentagon says that. A Democrat president. Pentagon says that. We all know it's going to be the worst thing. Climate change is the worst thing ever. It needs to be our number one. It's a number one priority of our Congress right now, of our House, because it's Democrat. And therefore, I'm declaring a national emergency. Could the president do that? Could the president shut down power plants? Could the president dictate, because it's the biggest crisis we will ever face and the biggest national emergency out there, that everybody has to drive an electric vehicle? You got to turn in your car. Again, scenarios that aren't likely to happen, because I wouldn't want to be the president that ordered everybody to turn in their cars. Everything is hypothetical here. But it's sort of the area of, when it comes to presidential power, when you see what past presidents have done when it comes to national emergency declarations, the majority of them are going after other countries. For example, we have a trade agreement with another country. That other country, we find out, is a leading exporter of terrorism, and we cancel a trade agreement with them. Or we freeze our assets in this country, and the president doesn't need Congress to do things like that. We put tariffs on countries that we feel are doing something wrong when it comes to trade. That's been the vast majority of things that the presidents have done under the declaration of a national emergency. Others, swine flu, for example, that was one that was done in the past, so you can move, assets to different areas. And that's why I thought it was interesting that I saw, Wall Street Journal. He probably has a legal authority, but it's still a bad precedent. So the word probably is what I saw the most. But we needed a little levity, as, you know, because it gets pretty wonkish when you get into all of the possibilities of, you know, how the courts would look at this. And so we needed some laughter. Thank you, Jim Acosta, for giving us this laughter. Did you hear about this? If you have, you're laughing already. That's because Jim Acosta went down to Texas, came down here, and went right to the border, and went right to the steel slat wall that exists down in McAllen. And he stood right by it. He touched it. And then, here's what Jim Acosta had to say.
And here are some of the steel slats that the president's been talking about right here. As you can see, yes, you can see through these slats to the other side of the U.S.-Mexico border. But as we're walking along here, we're not seeing any kind of imminent danger. There are no migrants trying to rush toward this fence here in the McAllen, Texas area. As a matter of fact, there are some other businesses behind me along this highway. There's a gas station, Burger King, and so on. But no sign of the national emergency that the president has been talking about. As a matter of fact, it's pretty tranquil down here.
So there you go. And then social media just blew up. Just blew up. Sarah Sanders, president's press secretary. When I went to with President Trump to the border today, I never imagined that Jim Acosta would be there doing our job for us and so clearly explaining why walls work. Thanks, Jim. There is no rusher. There's no migrant problem here because there's a wall. Then social media went nuts. Here's another one. I would like to thank Jim Acosta for pointing out how peaceful, safe, and secure it is at a part of the border that has a wall. A sincere and heartfelt thank you to Jim Acosta and CNN for finally showing what the president has been saying. Barriers work. Great job, Jim. U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy. Brilliant reporting from CNN's Acosta. Walls work. Thank you, Jim. My favorite, though, from Buck Sexton. Is it possible Acosta is actually a pro-Trump false flag operating under deep cover in the media? If so, he is genius. We said this before. Acosta's a good troll, but he's not that intelligent. You can't do a report like that and not realize that you're help promoting the effectiveness of the wall unless you're completely caught up in your own ego and caught so much up in the emotional fight with the president that you don't even know when you do something as stupid as that. I because he was in the sunglasses and he was outside, when I first saw it yesterday, I'm thinking to myself, is that an impersonator? That really can't be Jim Acosta. And I'm looking at him. He's got the glasses on, so you can't see his eyes. And he, you know, not dressed in the suit, not indoor lighting. So I'm like, okay, it sort of looks like him. Maybe it is. Maybe it's an impersonator, because could Acosta really be that bitter, that emotionally enraged at the president where he doesn't even realize what he is doing? And the answer is yes. So there you go. What a classic moment yesterday. I just can't wait to see. I know he tried to defend it on social media, but it was a poor attempt. And then he, from what I see, he dropped it. I got to see if he really went into defending it last night, because he got burned big time. He was self-owned, is what it's being referred to. Self-owned. He owned himself. And everybody knows it. Even Democrats know it. They're like, oh, what an idiot. 866-90-RED-EYE.
If you are worried that the government shutdown will mean no USDA inspectors to check your meat, poultry, or egg products, you can breathe a sigh of relief. Many of the jobs performed by USDA employees to keep Americans safe are considered essential functions and will continue. For example, nearly 90% of the Food Safety and Inspection Service's 9,500 employees will be on the job. Nearly 70% of the Forest Service's 33,000 employees will continue maintaining safety at our nation's forests. Nearly 90% of Agricultural Marketing Service employees will continue their grading and inspection services, as well as procuring commodities for nutrition assistance programs. And more than 60% of Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service employees will be on hand to inspect fruits, vegetables, and birds at borders and quarantine facilities. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. We'll get to some of your calls and comments following the bottom of the hour, but a couple of stories we want to make sure that we get in if you're just waking up. Eric and I both have stated, and by the way, Eric out this morning because he can't talk, lost his voice. But one of the things that we have been talking about is what's going to happen in the primaries, the Democratic candidates running for president. Kamala Harris is supposed to announce by the end of the month, and one of the things we've said is they're going to keep upping the game as to how much free stuff they're going to give you. And, you know, we've talked about the fact that what's been mentioned so far, and we are not yet in primary season, and already it is free college, free health care, baby bonds that would be where some children, depending on the income of the family, could get, by the time they get to 18, the money that the taxpayer dollars the government would give them, then the growth in a special account, by the time they got to 18, they would have $46,000 roughly in that account that they could use for college or to buy a house or whatever. And then you have, I believe it was Kamala Harris who came up with the $6,000 yearly income that they wanted to give, the, what do they call it, the, I got mind blank here at the moment. Well, let's just put it this way. Another Democratic presidential hopeful, probably doesn't have a chance, but Andrew Yang is running. He is vowing to pay every American citizen between the ages of 18 and 64 $1,000 a month if he is elected in 2020. Yang, who was running his presidential campaign largely around the idea of universal basic income. That's what I meant before with Kamala Harris. The universal basic income already launched a pilot program for a free cash payment known as the Freedom Dividend. CNBC reported this week. For the program, the pilot program, he selected one family from New Hampshire who he says will be receiving $12,000 in free cash for a year. So it's a pilot program for one person, one family. And at the end of the year, they're going to see if the family's happy with getting $12,000 in free cash. I bet you the family is. I know I'm going out on a limb on this. It's a pilot program. You never know how a pilot program is going to be viewed by those in the pilot program. But I bet you that that family is happy and so happy, and the pilot program so successful that they'll probably advocate for more money next year. Just guessing. But that's where we're going. Our article also, we read you earlier in the show about the presidential candidates now and the Democratic presidential candidates looking at, okay, how high can we go in the tax rates? Julian Castro, who announced an exploratory committee last week to run for president, was talking about, hey, we were doing great when it was 90%. So he's brought up the 90% figure. How high will we go? It is time for your national forecast.
A winter storm that will certainly interfere with travel is coming to the Midwest tomorrow. For the rest of today, we'll watch this system progress through Texas as rain showers. As the rain moves to the east and meets up with colder air from the north, the snowmaker begins for Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, portions of Kentucky, and the lower Tennessee Valley. Things will mainly stay north of I-40 tomorrow when the heavy snow begins. Several inches are expected. The icing and wintry mix associated with the system will hug the I-40 corridor from Nashville through the Carolinas. Showers will move throughout Texas on your Friday, and late tonight could even fire up some thunderstorms along the southern Texas and Louisiana border. In a separate system, we have rain on the west coast, expected from San Diego all the way to San Francisco as rain showers, and then snow for the upper elevations of the Sierras. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Bona Show.
And he is Eric Harley. He's up. Got no voice. I'm Gary McNamara. All right, I want to play our audio cut of the day. And it was going to be Jim Acosta alone, but then I realized I got to play how Tucker Carlson last night on Fox News introduced this whole segment. You ready for this? I just listened to it right now. I was going to play just the Acosta thing, and then I heard his build up to it. I'm like, no. This is too good. Here we go.
In fact, this debate is over. We're not getting a barrier along our southern border. We can't. Not now, not ever. That possibility was permanently destroyed today by a fact-seeking missile of truth launched by one of our country's premier cable news outlets. In a single devastating act of journalism, CNN killed the wall. Took their biggest guns to do it. The network dispatched its chief White House correspondent slash moral philosopher slash Renaissance poet, Jim Acosta, to the U.S.-Mexico border, specifically to the town of McAllen, Texas. Once on the ground in McAllen, Acosta wasted no time in proving once and for all that walls don't work. Watch the stand-up that changed history.
And here are some of the steel slats that the president's been talking about. But as we're walking along here, we're not seeing any kind of imminent danger. There are no migrants trying to rush toward this fence here in the McAllen, Texas area. No sign of the national emergency that the president has been talking about. As a matter of fact, it's pretty tranquil down here.
You see that? Take that, you nativist bigot freaks, you creepy wall obsessives. Jim Acosta just spanked you. He was there. Not in some cushy air-conditioned studio in Washington with the rest of the talking heads, but in the field, on the scene, doing the kind of hard-boiled shoe-leather reporting that has made Jim Acosta a household name. Acosta went right to the wall itself, the very wall he finds immoral and has often argued against at press conferences. And what Jim Acosta found there will shock you. Not a single illegal alien was anywhere near that wall. There was no tent city. There were no predatory gang members or coyotes. MS-13, not there. There was no sad, suffering caravan. Everything was just fine. Or as Jim Acosta so memorably put it, the area around that steel barrier was pretty tranquil.
That's how bad it is. The thing is, did Acosta know when he was doing it? And look, did he know when he was doing the report? Did he know what he was actually doing? That he was actually helping the cause of the wall? I wonder if people, the liberals watching CNN at that moment, were like, shut up. Shut up. What are you doing? Shut up. He's actually a mole. He's a conservative mole in CNN. That was the best thing I saw on Twitter yesterday. He's actually a conservative mole. All right, to you we go. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let us go to Chris in Denver. Chris, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
Good. Really good.
That's a great clip. I love that. Made my day.
Isn't it great?
What I was thinking, you know, you have that, the GoFundMe page for the, you know, where everybody donates to build the wall. Well, I think they should redirect that money and buy airtime on the major networks, you know, that a majority of the population watch, and run those Democratic clips of Obama and Hillary and Schumer and all those people saying we need stronger borders, we need a wall, we need a barrier, and have the ad paid for, like, responsible citizens for, you know, humanitarian immigration or something like that. So, you know, put their face on the new spin on immigration.
Well, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because we hit that earlier in the show, and that is that conservatives, Republicans, don't mind spending money on a political party if they know it's going to be effective. And we stated this from the very beginning, not just for the last 2 years in the Trump administration, but the last 15 years where the Republicans have completely blown it on something that is so easy, that it's a slam dunk victory, that the vast majority of Americans agree with them. But they should have been, as we've said, marketing on a consistent basis, and especially with television, pounding these ads, not an occasional, because you'll see it, because we'll play it once in a while. The RNC came out with this ad that ran online, and then it's gone. It's not even viral. It's gone after a couple of days. And you think of the hundreds of millions of dollars that they spend probably on average every year, and the billions that they spend over a period of a decade to market and get messaging out. And it's like, wait a minute. When it's a message is that clear, you want to rally? You want to raise money? Sit there and say, look, we want to push for more border security. Our plan is to, and you can fundraise like this, I would think, like crazy. We want to raise $100 million to run these ads to show the hypocrisy of the Democrats. You don't think you'd get that money? I think the Republican Party overall has done, and if you've listened to this show, you know it, and I think it's constructive criticism, it's that they've done a horrible job of marketing their own positions that a significant portion of Democrats agree with. The Democrat Party is a party of open borders. The people that actually vote for Democrats, maybe not so much so. But the actual party is. You need to put that word out. You need to focus in, not only on those people, but all the independents out there, to show the hypocrisy. And we're seeing it now. We talked about some of the fact-checking that they had to do on the president when he stuck to the script and didn't go into off to some other tangent. They had to fact-check him on Schumer. And we read to you the ABC fact-check. Yep, he's absolutely right. Schumer was for the wall. This president can get free publicity, has gotten free publicity, and you can, in a political sense and a debate sense, in an argument sense, you can nail them to the wall, because they don't have any debate points. They're running from the debate. They don't want to have it. They know they'll lose if you talk border security and illegal immigration. So, yeah, I would agree with you. Let's go to Mike in Indiana. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Gary. You kind of stole a little bit of my thunder there. They should advertise or put on commercials how much it would cost to maintain, purchase, operate drones 24/7 for the next 10 years. Things like that need to be put out there to see how much it would cost to do what the Democrats are speaking of doing. And to me, the Republican Party is not marketing, they're not putting out the information on television, if there's that commercials. The TV has to run the ads. They can't infringe on freedom of information. So I just don't understand why they're not doing that. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, do we have a war on drugs? Was that initiated by Congress? If that was, the war on drugs, the law would stop that. So, you know, where are we going with that?
Yeah, I mean, that has been brought up, but it's not technically, it's not the same as a declared war against another country. I understand the point. But, you know, you bring a good point on the drones, because the Democrats will throw out drones, but then they really don't explain it. Well, we need drones. We need the virtual wall. Well, what do you mean by that precisely? Are you saying that, you know, 30% of the 2,000 miles is basically there is fencing and things like that? And so are you saying the other 70% should just be drones? And what do you do with the drones? If the drones are flying out there, do we then need to increase by 10 times the amount of border security agents that will chase the people that we find on drones and chase them down? Is that what you wish to do? Is that your plan? And is that an effective plan? Or is a steel slat much more effective in those particular areas? But the whole point is, Mike, they really don't wish to have the debate on that. They really don't. As we had said with a liberal caller earlier who had called and said, well, you know, the president needs to listen to Will Hurd, who says we don't need a wall from sea to shining sea. Well, that's not what the president is advocating right now. He might have advocated that in the past, but the debate right now is a 200-mile section, 240-mile section, I believe it is, to add more barriers that the Border Patrol wants. They have said they'll allocate zero. Zero. We had read parts of Karl Rove's op-ed piece yesterday. And he said, look, these same Democrats voted for additional fencing just a year and a half ago. They're only doing it because it's Trump. As someone brought up earlier, this is just the resistance. That's what it is. You can look at that. You can look at when the president talked about Syria, the Democrats screaming, we don't want troops. We don't want troops. We don't want troops. We don't want troops. Trump says we don't want troops. We want troops. It's actually quite humorous. I talked about the meme that I saw that said, here's how Trump can get the wall. Offer to resign. Say, I will resign if we get the full wall. And said, the wall will be up by Friday today. It's like, I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't be. Is there anything? Eric and I have often asked this question. If he came out and said, look, I would like to have a single-payer health care system. I want Medicare for all. I agree with the Democrats completely. What would the Democrats do? I don't want him to do that. It's a hypothetical, all right? No, I'm not advocating that. But what would happen if the president did that? What would the Democrats do? It's humorous. It's also disgusting. Look, there are things. We had a great caller who's a Trump supporter who said, look, I think Trump is a great president for this time right now. Not a perfect man, flawed man, everything else. But as so many of us have said, look, there isn't probably any politician in Washington, D.C. that holds my values. But I look for those who promote the values and the morality that I want, even if they are themselves flawed people. That's what I look for. I want someone who is promoting my morality. Can't have everything. The last election was a binary choice. As I said, I disagree with those Republicans that say, well, if he doesn't get the wall, if he caves here, I'm not voting for him. I'll vote for a Democrat. I disagree with that. No matter what happens here, Trump's running in 2020. Whatever Democrat is there, please. It's not even a contest. He gets my vote. It's not perfect. Yeah, we get frustrated. If you've listened this week, I've got frustrated a lot. Eric's got frustrated a lot because we believe the Republicans have the argument and the president has had the argument and hasn't used it effectively over a period of time. Doesn't mean I'm not going to support them, because in general, they support the morality of what I want to see from government, even if their personal morality at times isn't up to what I would like to see. It's that simple. This isn't rocket science. 866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara. I just wondered that that in the future, that historians will look back at the whole Jim Acosta thing from yesterday being at the wall, and or journalists will look back in history, will look back into the history of journalism and say, here's what went wrong with activist journalism, that they got so emotional that they were filled with such hate and bile towards a president, and they were so emotionally invested with their rage and hate that here's an example of a journalist activist who didn't even know that he was making the president's point, who he hates and despises, and didn't even know it because of his emotional rage intersecting with his journalist activism. Just wondering. It'll be taught to classes 100 years from now. Here's what not to do.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.